It's time to eat.
Get in my belly.
Sit down and get ready to consume an abundance of fantasy football knowledge from Russ Tucker and Evan Silva.
Me so hungry.
On the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast.
Yeah, let's eat, baby. We are the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast. He is the star, as I say, each and every week, because he is. Evan Silva, the man behind rotoworld.com, where so many of you get your information about anything NFL, especially fantasy news. As those of you that listen to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast know, we got some news in terms of the great folks over at SeatGeek. So I'll let you know about the new title sponsor of the Ross Tucker Football Podcast over here on the Fantasy Feast. From time to time as well, it's a no-brainer. Get the app on your phone. Use the promo code Ross so you get $20 after you buy tickets to something, because you're going to eventually buy tickets to something, need them, whatever, and SeatGeek's by far the best way to do it. Speaking of tickets, Evan, we've got four more tickets to hand out for MFL 10 June version. Very much looking forward to it. Mike Hojnacki took advantage of Amazon twice. I don't know if it's Hojnacki. I don't know if the J is silent. You know who you are. Took advantage of Amazon twice. Matt Hammer, BetDSI, and Amazon. Joel Henry took advantage of the Amazon banner ad twice. Robert Hu took advantage of the Elite Team code and the Omaha Stakes code, both available at rostucker.com. So, boom, four more dudes for our June MFL 10, which reminds me, by the way, the May MFL 10 draft is this week. Get excited. And we'll announce four more next week. So time is running out, but you can still be in the June MFL 10. Just take advantage of any of the great sponsors we have over at rostucker.com and send me the sponsor confirmation. Say, yo, Ross, this is for the MFL 10 to ross@rostucker.com. Speaking of leagues and our listeners, Evan, I got a couple people on Tuckheads saying to me that they're discussing a new dynasty league. They're putting together a new dynasty league, which is perfect, because today is the first of a two-part series of dynasty rankings. Today we're going to dive into your dynasty rookie rankings, numbers 26 through 50. But I want you to emphasize why it's about more than just people that play dynasty.
We're learning about players. You know, I think it's just growing our knowledge collectively and knowing what to anticipate from guys when they get opportunities. You know, you want to have an idea of what this player might bring to the table if he gets the opportunity to play. Guys, every single year, because of injuries, because of suspensions, cuts, come out of nowhere and become contributors. And it will give you a little bit of an edge on your competition if you have an idea of, number one, who's next up on the depth chart, and number two, you know, are they a good athlete? Did they produce in college? You know, where were they drafted? Just having some background knowledge on these players that every single year, you know, guys come out of nowhere.
How different would your rookie rankings look for just this season as opposed to your dynasty rankings that we're about to go over?
They would not be that different. They would be a little bit different. I mean, you know, we're trying to gaze ahead a couple years in dynasty rankings. You know, we will talk a lot more about redraft rankings and redraft expectations as the season gets closer. They wouldn't be horribly different. Up at the top, it would be a little bit different. I would want Corey Davis as the 1.01 pick in dynasty drafts. But if I was in a redraft league, I would want the three big-time running backs, or maybe even the four big-time running backs, including Dalvin Cook, who's in a little bit shakier of a situation than Joe Mixon, Christian McCaffrey, and Leonard Fournette. Probably all four of those running backs ahead of Corey Davis in a league that is only playing for 2017. But we will talk about that, all that on the next show.
Yeah, today is 26 to 50, so it's a little bit deeper. And the guy you have ranked number 50, very interesting name for a lot of different reasons. Dede Westbrook, the wide receiver out of Oklahoma that the Jacksonville Jaguars took.
Yeah, really, really good college player. Was actually a finalist for the Heisman Trophy last year. Dropped only 4 of 84 catchable targets in his college career. He's a burner who ran 4.39 at the Oklahoma Pro Day and was really productive during his 2 years as a Sooner. He came up from JUCO and was super, super productive. Again, productive enough that he was invited to the Heisman Trophy ceremony. But he had a bunch of off-field issues. I mean, there were even murmurs before the draft that he might not get taken at all. The Jaguars wound up taking him in the 4th round. He's only 178 pounds. We do not see a lot. We see some receivers that have been able to excel at that light of a weight, but very few. And, you know, those guys tend to be pretty special. And in Jacksonville, Dede Westbrook is behind Allen Robinson, Marquise Lee, and Allen Hurns. Allen Hurns is under contract long term. He was a guy who scored 10 touchdowns in 2015 and was hurt a bunch last year. Marquise Lee and Allen Robinson are both in contract years this season. So the depth chart, I mean, I don't anticipate Dede Westbrook, you know, barring like a Marquise Lee trade, which actually wouldn't shock me, especially if Dede Westbrook has a good training camp. You know, barring something like that, I don't think that we're going to see Dede Westbrook get on the field offensively this year. He did do kickoff and punt returns last year at Oklahoma, so that may be an avenue for him to play right away. But, you know, the depth chart long term is probably a little bit better or more favorable than it looks when you initially glance at it.
How about Robert Davis at number 49, the wide receiver that the Redskins took in the 6th round out of Georgia State?
Very interesting story. Caught only 11 passes as a high school senior in a run-first offense. So he ends up at Georgia State, where he goes on to break all of Albert Wilson, you know, the Chiefs' third receiver, broke all of his records at Georgia State. Only T.Y. Hilton has more receiving yards in Sun Belt Conference history than Robert Davis. So production was definitely something that, you know, he checks that box. And then he goes to the combine. He had the highest spark rating among all receivers at the combine, ran 4.44 at 6'3", 219, huge catch radius with 33-inch arms. This is another situation where it doesn't look like he's a good bet for any early playing time. I mean, they got Terrell Pryor. They got Jamison Crowder. Josh Doctson, they used a first-round pick on last year, and he's going to get every opportunity to succeed. But Jamison Crowder's in a contract year, and Terrell Pryor is on a one-year deal. And Jordan Reed, I mean, he's got to be one concussion away from retirement. So there is pass-catching opportunity, maybe not in the immediate present, but down the road there should be opportunity for Robert Davis, and he checks a lot of boxes, even though he was just a 6th-round pick.
What about 48 on your list, Amara Darboh, the 3rd-round receiver out of Michigan that went to Seattle?
So all these receivers here kind of at the end of the top 50 are kind of in the same bucket. And I think that you can arrange them any way that you like, and that will hold true for the next few receivers as well. Amara Darboh was not a guy who really stood out in any way in terms of his profile, in terms of when I watched him play. I thought before the draft he might have a ceiling like in the range of a Terrence Williams as like a low-end number 2 receiver. The opportunity in Seattle would be to eventually overtake Jermaine Kearse, who was dreadful last season. But I don't see a big ceiling from Amara Darbo in the short or long term. And he's not really a guy that stands out to me on it. Some people really like him, but I don't think that he's ever going to be a high volume receiver in Seattle.
The next two I think are interesting. Mac Hollins, wide receiver that the Eagles took in the fourth round out of North Carolina.
Yeah, this Mac Hollins to me has a wide range of potential outcomes. I mean, at times he looks like Martavis Bryant when you watch him play. He's 6'4", 221, but he could also easily end up being just like an Andre Holmes guy, sort of player who is like a fourth receiver and special teamer. He was one of the best special teams players in the country at North Carolina. He ran 4.53, again, at 6'4", 221 before the draft, so some pretty good measurables. He averaged almost 21 yards per reception at North Carolina. So he can stretch the field, or at least he could in the ACC. And this is another situation where the depth chart doesn't look good for immediate opportunity, but that could change within the year. Alshon Jeffrey is on a one-year deal. Jordan Matthews is entering a contract year. And Torrey Smith's quote-unquote three-year contract contained only $500,000 guaranteed. I mean, if Torrey Smith stinks in camp, you know, there's a non-zero chance that he could be released before the season. I mean, I think that he will be on the team in all likelihood, but, you know, he doesn't have very much guaranteed money at all in his contract. And so that three-year deal is really just a year-to-year, almost month-to-month sort of commitment. Mac Hollins is big, and he can stretch the field, and that is a dimension that was severely lacking, as everyone knows who watched the Eagles' offense last season.
What about early opportunity from a depth chart standpoint for Chad Hansen, who the Jets took out of Cal in the fourth round?
Yeah, that could work in Chad Hansen's favor. Now, Chad Hansen is a guy who had great hands at Cal. He played with Davis Webb last season. He transferred up from Idaho State. I'm interested. So, and this will hold true with Josh Reynolds, who we'll talk about in a few slots. But he played in this air raid offense at Cal, and he played 98% of his snaps at right wide receiver. So he was not in the slot. He was in this exact same position on every single snap. We saw how that in some ways, I think, limited what Kevin White has been able to do. I mean, he's gonna have to learn to catch the ball from a different body angle. He's gonna have to just learn different positions and learn how to. He's got a big learning curve, I think, that he's facing. I thought that before the draft, he was a player that I compared to Chris Hogan as a sure-handed, above-average athlete. And with the Jets, if Eric Decker gets cut, then that opens up opportunity for Chad Hansen. Quincy Enunwa is in a contract year. So, yeah, there could be some opportunities early for Chad Hansen, certainly for Adarius Stewart, and we'll talk about him in a minute as well. But Chad Hansen is, I think, behind Adarius Stewart from that standpoint, where I think that Adarius Stewart is probably a little bit more ready to play.
Number 45 on your list is Bucky Hodges. He's the tight end out of Virginia Tech that the Vikings took in the sixth round. It's interesting, very physically gifted, yet I had a couple people tell me after watching him on tape that they thought he was, quote, terrible. You know, NFL people tell me that. So where's the disconnect here?
You know, I think that's interesting because he did look terrible quite often at Virginia Tech, but he also did some sensational things. He played X receiver at Virginia Tech. He wasn't a tight end. He was a 6'6", 257-pound X receiver. I mean, he did not play tight end whatsoever. He essentially played the same position at Virginia Tech that Mike Williams did at Clemson. He fell in the draft, I think, due to a combination of factors. What you mentioned, that some evaluators just simply did not like him. And also, he apparently had some off-the-field issues. Now, I went back and tried to find any evidence of that on the internet, And all I could find was like he got arrested for public intoxication as like a sophomore or something, which, I mean, I don't know, a lot of college students get arrested for that. But so I think that those are the reasons that he fell. I mean, I think that most people anticipated Bucky Hodges being a second, third, maybe fourth round pick. He falls to the sixth round. We know he's a good athlete. We know he's big. He's got potential, but being a sixth round pick really, really dims our expectations, I think, for Bucky Hodges, even though it seemed like he was a pretty good value pick and worth a shot there for the Vikings.
44, you got a quarterback, Mitchell Trubisky, Chicago Bears, the number two overall pick in the draft.
Yeah, all the quarterbacks are going to be ranked really low here. The probability of quarterbacks hitting in the NFL. So from 2006 through 2015, I went back and looked at all the first-round quarterbacks, and only 38.5% of them have been successes, and that is including guys who some people might not consider to be successes, like Jay Cutler and Ryan Tannehill. But, I mean, in the large scope of things, those guys were successes. They're long-term starters, et cetera. So the hit rate on quarterbacks is already pretty low. And then they don't have a whole lot of value in fantasy football. It's the most replaceable position. So really, if we're investing dynasty picks into quarterbacks, we want to make sure that they have a lot of upside, that they're really going to be different weekly difference makers on our fantasy team. And to me, Mitch Trubisky has the lowest upside from in a fantasy sense among the four quarterbacks that were selected in the first couple of rounds. And so I have him really low here. You know, I hope for the sake of Bears fans that he's a success, but I mean, he started 13 games in college. He was surrounded by a ton of NFL talent. We discussed Mac Hollins earlier, who was a fourth-round pick. Ryan Switzer, who was one of the best slot receivers in the nation, he was another fourth-round pick. Bug Howard, he was a priority undrafted free agent signing after the draft. And they had two running backs drafted in T.J. Logan and Elijah Hood. So I think that, you know, from a historical sense, Mitch Trubisky is like less than 50% to succeed. And I mean, I don't know how you can have a whole lot of conviction about a guy who made 13 starts in college at such a difficult position to evaluate.
And the next one's a quarterback, DeShone Kizer, 43, obviously went to the Browns in the second round.
He would be almost the opposite of Mitchell Trubisky, where the upside is there, but his team invested much less into DeShone Kizer. You know, whereas we saw the Bears, the Chiefs, and the Texans all trade up for their quarterback picks, the Browns kind of sat back and waited till the second round, and they took DeShone Kizer, who, you know, our buddy Josh Norris thinks was the best quarterback in this draft. And I mean, I think everybody knows by now that Notre Dame's season really went down the tubes last year. DeShone Kizer went with it. But I'll be interested to see, you know, he looks like Dante Culpepper, and that's who I thought that he had a chance to be after that 2015 season where he took over for Malik Zaire at Notre Dame. And I mean, he looked like, you know, one of the best college football players in the entire country. And that continued for a few weeks into last season, but everything just kind of crumbled. The Browns, and I think it comes from Hugh Jackson, the Browns do not think that Cody Kessler is necessarily the long-term answer. I mean, he was an accurate passer as a rookie, but he just does not have big-time physical traits. And DeShone Kizer, of course, does. I think that they will view DeShone Kizer as a project, but this is a guy who has big upside and could potentially be a weekly difference maker in Cleveland.
Number 42, you've got Eagles fourth-round running back Donnell Pumphrey from San Diego State. I'm still curious to see what the Eagles do with their running back group. It looks like they got a lot of the same guy.
Yeah, could not agree more. I think that they will add someone. I think. None of the beat writers think that Ryan Matthews is coming back. I mean, he's coming off of a fracture in his spine, I believe, that
in
required
his neck. Surgery. In his neck, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's hard for me to imagine him coming back and being effective or staying on the field. That's not something that he has ever been able to really do in the NFL anyway. Donnell Pumphrey is 5'8", 176 pounds. Every year, running backs coming out of college get compared to Darren Sproles. And I've yet to really see a running back that became Darren Sproles. With that said, Donnell Pumphrey has some interesting check marks on his profile. He was not just a scat back at San Diego State. He graduated as the NCAA's all-time leading rusher at 5'8", 176. He caught 99 passes in his college career. He's not really a great athlete. He ran 4.48 before the draft, which sounds like a fast 40 time, but that is actually slow for a guy who weighs 176 pounds, and the rest of his athletic measurables were not very good. He only did 5 bench press reps before the combine. As you mentioned, the depth chart does appear to be working in Donnell Pumphrey's favor. Darren Sproles is old. I think that Darren Sproles intends to retire after this season. But I don't know. I mean, Donnell Pumphrey could be an asset, I think, in PPR leagues if everything kind of breaks right for him.
Next up, D'Angelo Yancey, who the Packers took in the 5th round out of Purdue.
Yeah, this is a Josh Norris guy. Norris really liked him before the draft. He's 6'2", 220. He showed vertical ability at Purdue. You know, that is an element that the Packers have been missing at times from their offense. D'Angelo Yancey led the Big Ten in yards per reception last season, 19.4 yards per catch, scored 10 touchdowns. He had a really good three-cone time for his size, stood out to me on his athletic profile, 6.84 seconds. That's really good at 6'2" and 220 pounds. He dropped too many passes in college, but he landed with Aaron Rodgers, and that always should raise the intrigue of a wide receiver. I think he's going to go to camp and compete with Geronimo Allison and Trevor Davis and Jeff Janis and a bunch of guys, you know, at the bottom of the depth chart for a roster spot. I mean, he's a fifth-round pick. He's not going to be guaranteed to make the team. But he has some pretty interesting characteristics, and this is the best possible situation for a fantasy receiver. I mean, you know, top three in the league. Jordy Nelson is old. Devontae Adams is in a contract year. Randall Cobb, I kind of like, is a bounce-back candidate based on where he's going in drafts this year. But he's also a guy who just has not been the same in multiple years and has battled a chronic ankle injury. And it's possible that he just will never be the same. So pretty good landing spot, great landing spot, and pretty good prospect who's kind of flying under the radar right now.
What about the next one? D'Angelo Henderson, 5'7", 208, 6th round running back out of Coastal Carolina to the Denver Broncos.
Yeah, this is a guy who I took in the 5th round of a recent rookie draft. I don't think that anybody, and that was with a bunch of writers who are pretty clued in with this stuff. I don't think that anybody's really looking at D'Angelo Henderson, which is interesting to me. He's 5'8", 208 pounds, so he's not like Donnell Pumphrey, who's 5'8", 176. And he ran the same 40 time that Donnell Pumphrey did had much better peripheral athletic measurements. He's a better athlete, pure and simple, than Donnell Pumphrey, and he was also a workhorse at Coastal Carolina, the all-time leading rusher in Coastal Carolina history. So he goes to Denver, and C.J. Anderson, while plenty talented, has really failed, you know, every like annually to establish himself as a guy that the Broncos can count on to be their feature back. Jamal Charles, well, I thought that was an awesome pick by you in the 20th round of our MFL 10, a great, great pick. He's also a guy who, you know, I don't know that he's even going to make the team. Like, he doesn't have any guaranteed money in his contract. His contract is just very, very – would be very easily for them to dispose of. And I also saw a picture of Jamal Charles recently where he's, like, sitting back and you can actually see his knee. And, I mean, he had problems with both knees last year, but his left knee just looked like it was in really, really bad shape, like swollen. And I don't know. We'll see what he has left. And then Devontae Booker, who – I mean, he had the most gorgeous opportunity from a fantasy standpoint last year, and he was just flat out bad. And then they also traded Capri Bibbs during the draft to San Francisco. So, you know, this is a depth chart that wouldn't be too difficult for D'Angelo Henderson theoretically to climb, and he has a workhorse track record, and he's a good athlete. So I think that people are sleeping on this guy as well.
It's funny. You kind of go by position. Like, you had that run on receivers, and you had a couple quarterbacks. Now we got a run on running backs. Next one up at number 39 on your rankings, Elijah McGuire, the running back that the Jets took in the sixth round out of Louisiana.
Another guy that Josh Norris loves. This guy was not a great athlete, but he caught a ton of passes in college. I noticed that his yards per carry average every single year at Louisiana Lafayette, his yards per carry average dropped every year. And apparently he battled some weight issues, and that will obviously affect the explosiveness of a running back. But he lands in an intriguing spot as well. I mean, he's behind Matt Forte, who is nearing the end of the line. Bilal Powell, who I think we all think is pretty good, but he's not necessarily like someone that the Jets, you know, are going to commit to as a long-term feature back. So I think that there is an outside chance that Elijah McGuire could get on the field this year. I think that his chances of getting on the field this year are a little bit better than D'Angelo Henderson, and that's why I had him ranked one spot higher. But, yeah, I mean, these running backs are kind of in a bucket here together, and you can sort them however you want. But I think that they're all pretty interesting, and that includes number 38.
Yep, that is Brian Hill, the running back out of Wyoming that the Falcons took in the fifth round. It's funny, with some of these teams, Evan, it's like the Packers or the Steelers taking a receiver, or even now like the Falcons taking a running back. It's like – you almost give those guys the benefit of the doubt because of the team that took them.
Yes, yes. And they land in like tried and true systems for the position that they play. Steve Sarkisian, of course, is now the Falcons OC, and it's not Kyle Shanahan, but he is expected to keep the offense intact. Brian Hill, 6'1". 219, above average athlete. He had a 53rd percentile spark score at the combine, which was actually one of the – this year's running back class was not athletic. Not a lot of great athletes from like a strictly measurables standpoint. But this guy had 349 carries last year at Wyoming, played with Josh Allen – that quarterback who people think might be the number one overall pick in the 2018 draft. Brian Hill should immediately become the Falcons' number three back behind Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman. Devontae Freeman, while the Falcons, I think, want to extend his contract, they have not done that yet, and he is currently in a contract year. Tevin Coleman has 2 years left. Brian Hill is a little bit different than both of those guys. He's bigger. And if one of those guys goes down and, you know, Brian Hill shows well to the coaching staff, I think that Brian Hill would potentially become part of a committee. And he was a fifth round pick, and I think he should be number three on the depth chart right away.
Now we got back-to-back tight ends, 37, Jonnu Smith, who went in the third round out of Florida International to the Titans, and Gerald Everett, who went in the second round to the L.A. Rams out of South Alabama.
Jonnu Smith was a guy that before the draft I had compared him to Delanie Walker, and he lands on the same team as Delanie Walker. Jonnu Smith, Delanie Walker, by the way, turns 33 in August. He did not become like a fantasy relevant guy until later in his career with Tennessee, but he spent a lot of years in San Francisco, and he's not that young. Jonnu Smith was a rare four-year starter at tight end in college, caught 178 passes. When I watched him play, I thought he was a better blocker than I expected, and he is a complete freak as an athlete. At 248 pounds, 38-inch vertical, 10'7" broad jump, I get skeptical of these small school tight ends because it's such a difficult position for players to come into the league and make early impacts. And you know, now not only are these tight ends facing that, but they are coming from a small school and they have to transition, you know, to the new, a whole new speed of the game. But I like Jonnu Smith's situation behind an aging starter, and I like him as a prospect.
And then the next guy, Gerald Everett, South Alabama. Sean McVay took him pretty high, 44th overall pick in the draft.
Yeah, I watched the Rams post-draft press conference. They love this guy. They fell in love with him at the Senior Bowl. They said that they were willing to take him at number 37, but they did not have a first-round pick this year, and they traded out of that slot down to 44 and were – you know, the team was ecstatic that they were still able to get him. He's going to pair with Tyler Higbee. The Rams, they also discussed how they want to be a two tight end team, or at least have the flexibility to play that way. Gerald Everett is going to be more of the receiving tight end. You know, I bet if you asked, and they didn't mention this during the presser, but I bet if you asked Sean McVay privately about Gerald Everett, he would say that he wants to use him like the Redskins used Jordan Reed. And in that system in Washington, I mean, there would be tight ends who, even when Jordan Reed was hurt, the next guy up would become a fantasy factor. I mean, it was Vernon Davis for a bunch of weeks last year. It was Niles Paul a couple years ago. Derek Carrier even had some moments in that offense when Jordan Reed missed time. So I think that Tyler Higbee will be more of the Y tight end and play more on the line of scrimmage. He's 6'6", 250. Gerald Everett is more of a receiving tight end, and I think they will characterize him as their F tight end. And he will be like a slot receiver, and they'll split him out wide. You know, this offense is not easy to trust because it's so, so young and unproven. And, you know, this new coach, he's an exciting dude. But, you know, we don't know how all this is going to work. We don't know how if the light going to flip on for Jared Goff. But I think Gerald Everett is a small school tight end who will get immediate opportunities, not necessarily become a guy that we can use in fantasy right away, but that could definitely happen for him down the line. They love this dude, and they are going to use him as a pass catcher.
The next two guys seem to have pretty good opportunities, Evan, and that's running backs Jamal Williams, who went in the fourth round of the Packers out of BYU, as well as Wayne Gallman, who went in the fourth round of the Giants out of Clemson.
So the debate regarding Jamal Williams is going to involve Aaron Jones, a guy that we talked about a lot before the draft. I really, really liked him. We had Matt Waldman on the show. He's one of the best college to pro evaluators that there is. He really liked Aaron Jones. He checks a lot of boxes from an analytical standpoint, super productive, really good measurables. He will be a little bit higher for me than Jamal Williams, who's a bigger back who didn't catch passes at BYU. And I'm always going to lean toward the running back who has shown the ability to catch passes. Number one, all my dynasty leagues are PPR. And number two, I mean, that's just the way that the NFL is trending. I mean, you got to be able to play in the passing game. I don't know if Jamal Williams is going to be able to do that in the NFL. With that said, the Packers took Jamal Williams before they took Aaron Jones. So clearly they thought that Jamal Williams was better than Aaron Jones. And these guys are behind Ty Montgomery in Green Bay. And Ty Montgomery is a guy who I think has just monster upside this year from a fantasy standpoint, but he is also a guy who just converted from wide receiver. I mean, I guess he's still going to wear number 88 this season. And, you know, there were times where Aaron Rodgers would kick him off the field last year because he was doing things wrong. He's still learning how to play this position, and he's far from a guarantee. I think he's a boom or bust guy. And the Packers showed us that they have concerns about that. They drafted three running backs. They also took a guy out of, I think, Utah State, Devontae Mays, in the seventh round. So they drafted three running backs. And I mean, I don't know who's going to emerge from this pack. It's possible that none do, and Ty Montgomery locks it down this season. But they're all guys that we need to know about playing in one of the best offenses in football.
And Gallman with the Giants?
Yeah, he's not a guy that I liked a whole lot coming out of Clemson. I thought he was terrible in pass protection, just did not do a lot of things that I look for when I'm evaluating running backs. But, I'm far from a perfect evaluator. And he landed in a pretty good spot as well. Paul Perkins is very, very unproven. He was pretty mediocre as a rookie. And the only other running back of note that the Giants have, I mean, unless you want to, you know, dig deep on their depth chart, talking about like Sean Drone and Orleans Darkwa, is Shane Vereen, who tore his triceps twice last season. And, I mean, you know, another injury like that, and he's probably out of the league. So Wayne Gallman lands in a pretty good spot in terms of early potential opportunity.
Let's keep it moving, and we'll go to number 33, another tight end, Adam Shaheen, the big boy out of Division II Ashland, landed with the Bears, pick 45, one pick after your boy Gerald Everett.
Yeah, so this guy was a freak. You know, you watch him play at Division II Ashland, he's just a complete man among boys, which he should be, you know, based on the fact that he went in the second round of the draft. We talked earlier about how these tight ends coming from small schools are making leaps in competition. He's making the biggest one of them all. And, he just has a wide range of outcomes. I mean, he looks like Gronk at times, legitimately. And he sort of tested like that before the draft. I mean, he's almost 280 pounds. He moves so, so well for that size. He could also be like a Scott Chandler type. I really don't know what to think about Adam Shaheen, you know, coming from Division II. And, I mean, he could be a monster, but I just have a really low level of confidence in him, trying to, like, pretend that I know what is in his future.
What about Josh Reynolds, the receiver that the Rams took in the fourth round? You talked about him a little bit earlier. You obviously like him and like the situation to have him, you know, up here where you have him ranked at number 32.
Yeah, Norris compared him before the draft to the old Bengals receiver Chris Henry, who, you know, during his short time in the NFL, he died tragically, but he was a spectacular player on those old Bengals teams. He was the third receiver behind Chad Johnson and TJ Houshmandzadeh. But I can see that. You know, he's Josh Reynolds is really, really long. He's 6'4", almost 6'5", and like 200 pounds. I think he actually dipped below 200 pounds. I mean, he's going to have to keep his weight up. He's got really long arms. He has incredible ball skills. I mean, just a natural at like being next to the cornerback and being and the ball's in the air, and he'll just snatch it right away. I mean, he is, you know, he almost has like basketball caliber ball skills. He ran, I think, in the 4.5s before the draft. He is the only true perimeter receiver really on the Rams right now. I think the Rams want Tavon Austin to play on the perimeter more this year. But, you know, you look at the other guys that they have, you know, the tight ends that we discussed, Robert Woods, who is more of an interior receiver, and they drafted Cooper Kupp, who is more of an interior receiver. They inherited Pharaoh Cooper, again, more of an inside receiver. Josh Reynolds is a guy who's going to play on the outside, and he did that on 85% of his snaps. He was at right wide receiver in the Texas A&M offense, which is of that air raid variety. You know, so he's got a lot to learn, but I love watching him play. I think he has a chance to be a player.
How about a couple of quarterbacks back to back? Pat Mahomes, you have at 31, obviously trade up in the first round Chiefs. Deshaun Watson at 30, trade up in the first round Texans.
Mahomes has, you know, top five NFL upside if everything comes together, I think. You know, he's got the size, he's got the athleticism. I mean, these guys, with the exception of Trubisky, like ran for a bunch of touchdowns in college. And that is something that can have a huge impact on fantasy scoring. So when I see these quarterbacks that ran for a lot of touchdowns in college, you know, that's awesome for fantasy. Really, really want that. And he goes with Andy Reid. I don't think that we're going to see him play this year. I think that would be a surprise. But, you know, maybe in week 17, if the Chiefs qualify for the playoffs and are able to rest starters. But Patrick Mahomes, long term, he's a guy, he's going to burn a roster spot in all likelihood for a year. And that kind of stinks, having to devote a roster spot to a guy who is not helping you at all and has no chance to help you. But he can be a difference maker down the road.
And Deshaun Watson?
Deshaun Watson, I think, gets on the field in year one, and he's another guy who ran for a ton of touchdowns at Clemson. Now, he was surrounded by a lot of NFL talent. You know, Patrick Mahomes did not have that at Texas Tech. Deshaun Watson certainly did. There are some questions about Deshaun Watson's physical skills. He had the lowest ball velocity of any quarterback who threw at the combine. Greg Cosell compared him physically to Alex Smith. But he does have fantasy upside because of that rushing potential. And if you look at the weapons that they have in Houston, I mean, it's a pretty good core. DeAndre Hopkins, Will Fuller, has a certain role where I think he can be very good. Braxton Miller, coming up as a third-round pick last year, he should be more of a contributor this year. And they have two solid tight ends in C.J. Fedorowicz and Ryan Griffin, who can both be like safety valves for a rookie quarterback. I mean, Deshaun Watson, having a rookie year like Dak Prescott is really tough and rare. But, I mean, I think it's within his potential range of outcomes to be a fantasy contributor like that right off the bat. I mean, I don't have a lot of faith in Tom Savage holding on to this job for very long.
The next two guys you mentioned earlier are Darius Stewart, who the Jets took in the third round. He's number 29. In your dynasty rookie rankings, and Aaron Jones, the Packers running back out of UTEP, is at number 28 on your list.
Yeah, talked a bunch about Aaron Jones already. I think he's a better real life and fantasy prospect than Jamal Williams, but the Packers disagreed, and that is notable. With our Darius Stewart, was not a real productive guy at Alabama, all things considered, but the Alabama offense had issues. I mean, their quarterback last year was just not very good. Jalen Hurts, they really didn't have very much of a passing game. A vast majority of their passing game completions came off pitches around the line of scrimmage and manufactured touches. And so when you watch O.J. Howard and our Darius Stewart play, you do not see them running a route and getting open against a cornerback very often. I mean, that wasn't a big part of their offense, throwing the football down the field. But I thought that our Darius Stewart, when I watched him play at times, reminded me of a cross between Pierre Garçon and Golden Tate. And he is going to get on the field, I think, immediately for the Jets, has an outside chance to be a fantasy asset in year one. I do kind of question his upside long term, because he was just not really productive at the college level. Again, there were reasons for that, that some of them very much beyond his control. I don't know if he's ever going to turn into a big time number one receiver. I would say that's really unlikely, but he could become a contributor as a mid-range number two. And I think we'll see him play all over the field. I think we'll see him play in the slot and as a Z receiver.
27, Cooper Kupp, who you mentioned earlier when you're talking about Josh Reynolds, he went in the third round of the Rams, who brought in a whole host of ball catchers for Jared Goff.
Yeah, so Cooper Kupp kind of got overhyped early in the draft process. After the Senior Bowl, people were saying that he was a first-round pick. But that doesn't, we thought that was kind of silly. But, that doesn't mean he's a bad prospect. He actually reminds me a lot of, and he's bigger than Jamison Crowder, but his profile is sort of the same. And I wonder if Sean McVay, who, of course, coming from Washington, drew a little bit of a parallel to that as well. Because Jamison Crowder was a guy who did not have great athletic measurables overall, didn't run a fast 40 coming out of college, played at Duke, Cooper Kupp was, he played at Eastern Washington, neither of course very, hailed for their football programs, but they had great instincts on the field. They caught everything, and they both had great short area quickness measurables. The three cone time for Cooper Kupp and Jamison Crowder, just outstanding. The 10-yard split for Cooper Kupp, outstanding. So, and I think that shows up in his game. He's a natural slot receiver. And I have liked Robert Woods as a fantasy pick for this year, and I still do. But I think that Cooper Kupp, I don't think it should shock anyone if he comes in day one, running high percentage routes in the slot with Jared Goff, who we haven't seen a whole lot from him. But, Jared Goff being most comfortable throwing to a guy like Cooper Kupp. He could lead the Rams in receptions right away.
The last guy out of your 26 to 50 dynasty rankings, Taywan Taylor, a third-round pick of the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, another Norris guy. Awesome, awesome prospect. 81st percentile spark, reminded me of Emmanuel Sanders, cross between Emmanuel Sanders and Kendall Wright coming out. The situation is a little bit murky right now, They did use a pick last year on Tajay Sharp, fell in love with him and started him as a rookie. Rishard Matthews was very good for the Titans last year. And, of course, they used the number 5 overall pick on Corey Davis. But I think that Taywan Taylor is a better talent than Tajae Sharpe. And Rishard Matthews is in the second year of a three-year deal. And he's not, you know, although he had a really good season, I really like him. I've always liked Rishard Matthews. He's not necessarily someone that a team is going to be like, you know, all right, you know, we're sticking with this guy through thick and thin. So if Taywan Taylor comes in and shows that he can play, you know, it's within the realm of possibility that he could start eating into other guys' snaps. And I mean, I think he absolutely can play. Coming from Western Kentucky, set all the records there. You know, it's just it's hard to say that this guy is going to help you very much right away, but I think he is a really, really good long-term prospect.
I challenge all of you to find any better breakdown of the 26th through 50th best rookies for this year in fantasy football and years to come. Evan Silva's dynasty rankings, absolutely incredible, your knowledge of all of those guys as players, their situations, even the contract situations for the guys on those teams. Fantastic job, Evan. As always, we will get to 1 through 25 next week, but you will be able to have the opportunity to hear from Evan between now and next week, because he's going to make an appearance on the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, because there has been so much overlap, so many trends between fantasy and quote-unquote real football. We need to get Evan's insight on the RTFP as well. For this podcast, though, this week's Fantasy Feast, totally stuffed, overflowing with info on these rookies. Thanks to Evan. I think we're done here.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Feast Podcast. Make sure to also subscribe to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Even Money, and the College Draft Podcast, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.
So I've been telling you guys about TrueCar for a while now, and what's amazing about it is as soon as my wife said, honey, I need to get a new car, I said, TrueCar. Because they have the information on anything that's been sold in your area. Think about it. 3 million cars sold, over 13,000 dealers, over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available, average savings of over $3,000 off MSRP. Using TrueCar, you can easily find the car you want. And here's the key. TrueCar will show you what other people in your area paid for the car you want. Now you know what a fair price is, so you can feel confident. Before we even started looking, she was looking at Explorers, Tahoes. I said, hey, look at TrueCar, and you can find out exactly what other people have paid in the area. It is awesome. TrueCar customers are more likely to enjoy a faster buying process when they connect with TrueCar certified dealers. Plus, TrueCar users save an average of over $3,000 off MSRP. When you're ready to buy, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.